and went out to the garden to check my trap. And sure enough, that critter had pushed dirt all around it and buried it without getting caught. I think it was a gopher, but since I didn't catch it, I may never know. You know, gopher traps don't work really well on moles or ground squirrels, if you've ever tried that. But they usually work fine on gophers. And though I don't like killing any animal, well, no, that's true. I don't take delight in swatting mosquitoes. I don't think too much about it when I do it, but I don't particularly take delight in killing any animal. I do confess that when gophers get into my garden, I hunt them with lethal force. But as a kid, I can remember reading animal stories written from the perspective of the animal and always rooting for the fox or the coyote or whoever it was that he would sneak up and steal the bait and not get caught in the trapper's mean, nasty trap. And it is from that perspective that we're going to look at our scripture passage for today. You'll see the connection here in just a moment. But open your Bibles, if you would, to Luke 17, verse 1. Luke 17, verse 1. And let us read the first couple of verses here together. Well, I guess we'll read four verses together. I'd love to have some volunteers read. Since there's four verses, maybe four volunteers. Ready? Who's volunteer number one? All right, verse one. Who's got verse two? Two, three, and four? All right. Okay. Debbie, go ahead. That's fine.
Jesus said to his disciples, "Things that cause people to sin are bound to come, but woe to that person through whom they come. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea than that he should offend one of these living."
Take heed to yourselves. If your brother sins against you, rebuke him. If he repents, forgive him.
You got verse 4? All right. Thank you. Okay. To whom is Jesus speaking in these verses? Did you notice? Take a look back and see. All right. To his disciples. This whole the whole section before this that we've been studying and reading, he was talking to the Pharisees who complained about him hanging out with sinners and tax collectors. Now it switches back. He's speaking to his disciples. How likely does Jesus say it is that stumbling blocks, or Debbie's translation said things that cause people to sin. Some of the other translations say something along the lines of stumbling blocks or offenses. How likely does Jesus say it is that these things will come? They're bound to come, I think your translation said. The New American Standard says it this way. It is inevitable that stumbling blocks will come. But what experience does Jesus predict for those responsible when they do come? What experience does he predict for them? Yes, he says it would be better for that to happen. What experience does he say they will have? No one can see it? I see some people looking at least. This is good. What does it say?
If he sins, you'll rebuke him. If he repents, you forgive him.
Yeah, this is not the experience Jesus says a person will have if they cause someone else to sin. What experience does he say they will have?
It'll be a millstone.
No, he doesn't say a millstone will be tied around your neck and you'll be thrown in the sea. He said it would be better if that happened to you.
Yeah.
So whatever this experience is, it's worse than having a millstone tied to your neck and thrown in the depths of the sea. What does he say? What experience does he predict for these folks?
Is it woe?
Woe! Yes, and that's not how you stop a horse. He says, woe to you. You know what woe is? We read this in our Bibles, woe unto you. What does that mean?
Bad stuff coming.
Bad, all right? I looked it up in the dictionary. Mental and physical anguish, suffering. Apparently, worse suffering than being drowned with a millstone tied to your neck. That doesn't sound like much fun to me. So whatever this is, must be pretty bad. Whoa. It is worse than being drowned with a millstone tied to your neck. If one is involved in being a channel through which, or a source of stumbling, for whom, does it say? Not all at once now. Yes, for little ones. In fact, how many little ones? Preach it. Just one. Now, I just want you to follow this. You would wish that you had died an untimely death by drowning, because that would be preferable to the experience you will have if you are involved in causing even just one of God's beloved little ones a scandal. Literally, the word where it says stumbling blocks or offense or things that cause people, it's a word scandal that we get in English. It's the Greek word scandalon, which we have in English as scandal. But in Greek, the word doesn't mean tabloids printing your picture, you know, and all kinds of bad news about you. A scandal was quite literally a trap, a snare, like my gopher trap in my garden. You would wish that you had died by drowning before you had the opportunity to be a snare to someone else, even just one person. One of these little ones. Well, here's the millstone. That's just a graphic representation for you who didn't know what a millstone looked like. For scale, that's not too huge. A person standing there would come up, the bottom of that mill platform would come up to about here, probably on me. So, and we're talking this particular millstone. This is actually an olive press, but this particular millstone, the top stone is about yay big. Yeah, big enough to do the job. I looked up and found some pictures of some traps, some snares. This one here on the left is a baited figure four deadfall, it's called. Now, you can see there's kind of a cross piece here with some bait on the end of it. The idea is that when the animal walks in underneath this heavy stone and starts to chew on the bait, this little section right here, you can see the representation. It's just kind of two pieces notched together. And you jiggle that thing at all, it knocks this loose, which makes this fall off. And if you sized the trap properly for the animal you're trying to catch, mercifully, the rock falling on the animal will crush it and kill it. Right? If it's sized properly. This down here is known as a rolling snare. And you can see there's no bait with this one. There's a little loop here. And you set this little loop up on a track where an animal usually walks. And when the animal comes along, pokes its head through that noose in order to keep walking down the track, it knocks loose this little mechanism here, which is right there. And the sprung, tied down sapling springs up into the air. And again, mercifully, if you size the trap right, will kill the victim rather than just leave it dangling by the neck until you come to fetch it out of the trap. But there are lots more traps out there than just the ones you can go out in nature and make out of the readily available materials. So here's one. It's called a Duke coil spring. This one isn't designed to kill the victim. It's just designed to grab its leg and keep it pinned there, chained there, until you come and club it to death. This one is called a live catch snare, similar to the rolling snare that we saw on the previous slide. Only this one is made out of wire and metal and held in the ground with a stake. It's designed, I believe, to catch something by the leg, because obviously it's a live catch snare. This one here, however, a kill snare, is designed for around the neck again. This is just similar to the other one, spring-loaded, but made out of wire. This one here is called a body gripper, because the creatures that it's designed to catch, the animal gets all the way in it and it grabs the whole body. As I looked around for pictures of traps, I was astounded by the sheer variety of killing tools available. Because you understand, you know, the purpose of a trap, even if it doesn't kill the victim immediately, is what? Yeah, ultimately, somebody's going to come along. That's true. We have a heart traps, right? We have live traps. These kinds of traps are designed for the hunter, right? Not for the relocator. As I looked at all the different pictures, I was astounded by the variety available. And the spiritual significance began to sink in. If this is what mankind has invented to catch and kill animals, what kinds of traps have been invented to catch humans? For when Jesus says that traps are inevitable, he's not referring to animal traps. What's the target animal that Jesus is talking about when he says snares are inevitable? Human beings. And surely Jesus isn't talking about snares to tell us, oh, that you're doomed to stub your toe on the bedpost at night. Right? He's not talking about physical snares. What kinds of snares and traps is he referring to? Designed to catch humans. Satanic snares? But what kind of, how do they affect us if they're not physical snares? Their sin? Okay. All right. They would affect us spiritually. Yes. These are spiritual traps. What are some characteristics of traps? You can help me here. Having just seen a few, what are some characteristics of traps? All right. It's actually a characteristic of pretty much every trap that it is hidden somehow, right? Whether it's just disguised by leaves or, and someone was telling me about Ken Rose thought that the Pit River is called the Pit River because they would dig pits next to it in order to catch creatures that came down to drink, right? I don't know if that's true or fish, right? But there are all kinds of traps, but the idea behind that is it's hidden. It's covered up with branches and leaves, and when the deer come down to drink, crash, they fall into the pit. So, traps, snares are generally hidden. What else? Any other characteristics of traps?
Usually designed to cause some kind of distemper in one way or another.
All right. Well, we can take that clear to its end. We talked about that already. They're not friendly devices, right? They're designed to kill. Whether they do it themselves or whether the hunter coming along afterward, the end thereof is death. Right? Any other characteristics of traps? Why are there so many different traps? So many different kinds. I just showed you a handful.
It's according to what they want to catch.
The traps are designed specifically for the animal or type of animal. So, for instance, you wouldn't put one of those little rolling snares up to catch a deer, right? You'd put one up to catch a rabbit. It's animal specific. And you might use a very large deadfall to catch a bear, but you wouldn't catch a squirrel in it very well. All right? If you did, you'd have squirrel pancake instead of squirrel that you could do something with. Right? So the traps are designed specifically for the creatures they are intended to catch. Any other characteristics of traps? Anything else you noticed from the pictures or?
They won't. That trap will not let whatever you want loose either.
All right, it's a one-way street.
It's a one-way street.
All right, they're not designed for catch and release. This kind, anyway, are not designed for catch and release. Anything else? Do you notice how many of these have springs? Why do they have
springs on both ends where you have to use both feet and the center?
Now, the first one we looked at, the deadfall, didn't have a spring, but it has another force at work. What's the idea behind the springs or the gravity there? Yeah, they're designed to be quick. The trap doesn't do much most of the time. It sits there, it's very still, it's slow, it doesn't chase anything. But once you get in the place where it's too late to get out, bam, quick.
Some of them use also on that trigger that they sets it off, they put bait.
Yes, all right. Traps are often baited. That was one of the things we saw in the first time. Not all of them. Sometimes they're just placed in a place where people are going to pass by, or animals in this case are going to pass by very often. But often there is bait. Are you beginning to see the spiritual significance of some of these things? You are being hunted. Do you realize that? You are being hunted. So am I. And the hunter who is coming after us doesn't give us a sporting chance. You follow what I'm saying? He doesn't come up and show himself and say, "All right, run as fast as you can and I'll try to catch you." He lays traps and snares. The equivalent of walking up and shooting you in the back. And they're designed, this is really unnerving to me. Each snare or trap is designed specifically for the one it's intended to catch. I read the story of this trapper. He was trying to figure out why the coyotes were not getting in his traps. He had 84 traps set out in the line, and the animals kept digging in from the backside and taking the bait, and he couldn't understand why that was happening. And he was getting into those coyotes' heads, trying to figure out how they were thinking and what they were. And it just gave me the creeps. So I realized there is a hunter out there who is trying to get into my head and figure out what it's going to take to catch me. and tailoring the specific traps to my characteristics. And he's not friendly. He has no qualms about sneaking up behind me. He does not intend to let me go. He's trying to figure out what kind of bait. No, but he wants to take me to the place where I'm going to be caught. And there's a fine line between being able to walk away from the trap and being so stuck that I'm at his mercy, of which there is not any. Yeah, live traps. Absolutely. Yeah.
Some of them will even eat their leg off so they can get out.
Well, Jesus had some things to say about that. You recall? He said it'd be better for you to enter life with a limb missing than to hold on to your limb and stay caught in Satan's trap. I found that very interesting. Found that very interesting when that came up in Surprise Valley after we noticed this. But Jesus' point is not so much. Well, let me back up. There are times in my life that I examine where I am. They ought to be more often, I'll be honest with you. And I find out, wait a minute, here I am over here doing this, but what I say I want and what I really want is over there. How did I get over here? And I find that someone has been slowly, you know, through a trail of crumbs, just leading me farther, bit by bit, tailored to me, so subtly that I didn't even notice it was happening. Or if I did notice it was happening, I say, well, I'll fix it later. I'll fix it later. I'll fix it later. And I don't know how close I am to the point where that trap springs. All I know is that I've been slowly led away from where I really wanted to be without perhaps even realizing. But Jesus' point here is not so much that we are all being hunted. In fact, he says, being hunted is a fact of life here, right? I mean, he just says, that's a given. You're all being hunted. We're all being hunted. Being hunted is inevitable. What is it that he says is optional? Anyone? Go for it. Getting caught is optional? Well, we would hope so, although he does seem to say somebody is going to get caught some of the time. But his emphasis is not so much on you getting caught or not caught as what? Pardon? Being the hunter, or maybe we could put it this way, helping the hunter. Right, he says, people are going to get caught. Snares are out there. Somebody is going to get caught. But woe to the person who leads someone else into the trap. One of the most interesting traps I read about was for geese. This will blow your mind. Very subtle, very simple. You dig a 20-foot long trench going on a slope down until it's 2 or 3 feet deep at the bottom of it. Headed toward the water. The geese come headed for the water. They go, oh, it's downhill. How nice. And ching, 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 down into the trench. They can see over the top of the trench because they got long necks. They don't think they're in any danger because they can still see. But you get 6 or 7 geese stacked up in a trench that's only this wide. They can't turn around very well. There's somebody behind them if they try. They can't get their wings out to fly away. All the hunter has to do is walk up and grab them by the handful out of the trench. Now, yes, walking into the trench is optional. You getting caught yourself is optional. But what Jesus says is, woe to you if you're the lead goose and you lead all the rest of the geese into the trap. Yeah, the traps are out there. But woe to the person who helps the hunter to catch his friends. Or specifically, which ones? The little ones. What would little mean in this context? Little in what way?
Little in faith.
Little in faith? What does that mean? For purposes of trapping and avoiding being trapped, what does that mean to be little? I mean, if it's physically small, the squirrels can avoid a lot of the traps because they're too small for them. What does it mean to be little in this context of being hunted?
New to the faith.
New to the business of avoiding traps?
Well,
that. New to the...
Being a new Christian.
Yeah. Somebody who has less experience than you at staying out of the trench. Somebody who's going to follow you where you go. Somebody who you could talk into, here, come chew on this bait, and wouldn't know any better. Somebody who ought to be able to look up to you, who ought to be able to learn from you how to outsmart the trapper. Woe to you if you lead such a person to their own death. I was reading this trapper's story of the guy with the 84 traps who couldn't figure out why he wasn't catching any coyotes. He liked to set his traps in areas where there was evidence that there were litters of coyotes, new baby coyotes being born. Why would he set his traps in that place? Because the young ones don't know any better. They don't have years of experience avoiding traps.
And they also use a scent on these traps too.
Well, he finally figured, and he doesn't know for sure, but he finally figured, this blew my mind. I had no idea that they do this, but he takes all his traps, he soaks them in lye, right, to make sure there's nothing stuck to them, no human scent on them, and then he would boil them with, I don't know, some kind of bark or something to tan them so they don't smell like something that doesn't belong in the woods. Follow what I'm saying? He'd spend hours cooking his traps to make them not smell like humans, not smell like anything, you know, from the city or whatever. And he wore gloves when he went out and set them so as not to get any human scent on them. And he couldn't figure out why this one line of traps was not, you know, catching anything. But it just so happened that he had two guesses. He had taken these traps in, all clean, you know, all nice, and he'd stowed them in the house under a tarp while he was gone for a weekend. And he said, I don't know whether my son decided he was going to help me and tampered with them and got some scent on them that didn't belong. Or the other thing, I guess he put wax paper down under the traps where there were a lot of ants in order to keep the ants from getting onto the carcass of whatever he'd... And he says, maybe I got a roll of wax paper that was somehow, you know, contaminated, dirty somehow. And without realizing, he said, 84 traps, that would be about one roll's worth of wax paper. He said, I've never used wax paper again since. And I don't bring my traps in the house because I don't know who's going to mess with them. The amount of work, you know, the subtlety that he went to just blew my mind. So, less experienced at avoiding traps. I have to ask again, am I a source, a channel of temptation? Am I leading someone else into a snare? How can I avoid what Jesus says is a fate worse than death, right? But why would that be a fate worse than death? Can you explain that to me? Why it would be worse to live long enough to cause someone else's death than if you had just died yourself early. Because there is a judgment, there is responsibility, there is such thing as a fate worse than death. I was struck with this, you know, just looking back, and we're going to talk about this more in the bigger context, but Jesus says there's rejoicing in heaven over how many sinners that repent?
One.
Over one sinner that repents. Here he says there is woe and suffering in hell over being responsible for the loss of one of my children. Two sides of the same coin. So how can I avoid this fate worse than death? What does Jesus say? Look at your Bible again if you haven't got it out still. If you have got it out still, look at it too. Watch yourselves. Mine says, be on your guard. What other translations do we have for that phrase? Take heed. All right, that's... That means pay attention. Sit up and pay attention. You're being hunted. We're all being hunted. This is no time to have your head between your knees. Sit up and pay attention. One of the other, you know, you can't catch geese. Excuse me, you can't catch ducks with a goose trench like that. Geese are so big that once they get in, you know, they can see out the top. And they can't get their wings out. They have a hard time walking backwards, too. But ducks can take off near vertically. And they're down in a hole, they can just boom, and they fly out. So you know how to catch ducks? Anybody? You wrap weeds around your head. Get down in the water, and slowly, ever so slowly, swim your little mat of weeds over next to a duck. The ducks don't care about weeds floating in the water. So you reach out and you grab both feet and yank the duck under the water. And the author said if you're careful and quick, you can get two ducks. Why would that be? Because the ducks don't think anything of another duck disappearing under the water. Now, that's spiritually significant. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Jesus says, be on your guard. Don't just sit there floating on the water when your neighbor disappears. You got to be paying attention. There's somebody hunting you out there. After your neighbor disappeared, guess who's next? If you don't care that your neighbor disappeared, pay attention. Be on your guard. How does Jesus say to be on your guard? What does that look like? Don't all blurt it out all at once. Yeah, that's to be on your guard or watch yourself. How does he say to do that? What does it look like? If your brother sins, some translations have against you in there. Mine just says if your brother sins. Apparently there's some discrepancy in the manuscript, right? If your brother sins, in other words, if your brother gets caught in a trap. You following that? If your brother is the duck who got... Don't ignore it. If your brother sins, what do? You say, buddy, you're going to die. You got caught in one of the devil's traps. And you may not be dead now, but when he comes around, he has no other purpose for this trap. rebuke him. And if he repents, forgive him. If he says, you're right, I got caught in the trap, I took the bait, it was a bad idea, forgive him. Because it's all about saving your brother's life. Not saying, you got caught. Guess who's next, buddy? It's all about saving your brother's life and saving yourself from a fate worse than his. A fate worse than death. Okay. Why is this not clicking? There it is. Why is it that we can sit in church, bobbing along on the water, and somebody next to us disappears? And we just go floating along. Why is that?
You don't have any personal interest in it.
You don't see it.
Well, maybe they went for a dive. Jesus says, pay attention. Pay better attention than that. You're being hunted. Don't assume anything. When I see my friend caught in sin, by the way, I saw a bunch of pictures of animals caught in traps. I picked a black and white one so you could eat potluck afterward. Do you understand what I'm saying? This picture is not that offensive in black and white. And I know there are kids here, and so I did that on purpose. But this is not a pretty picture. Do I come up to my friend and say, oh, that's a pretty new bracelet you have on, when their leg is caught in a trap? I say, buddy, it'd be better if we chewed your leg off and left it than for you to carry that trinket around. Even animals that get released from traps sometimes die just from the shock, from the damage to the limb. Why do we have such a hard time doing this? If people were honest about that and they said, oh, I like doing this, then we'd say, well, okay, you know, more power to you. Go ahead and go do it. We don't like it, but you're allowed to do that if you want. But so often when I encounter people who are caught in a trap and you rebuke them or confront them or say, this is bad news, what kind of a reaction do you get? You get a big offended, defensive reaction. And I got thinking, why is that? Well, first of all, why am I so fearful about their reaction? You know, I mean, what do I care about the reaction? Here's somebody who's going to die. I should have pity on them. But why is it that an animal caught in a trap? Have you ever been around an animal caught in a trap? Chester Robertson was saying they were hiking the Mortar Wilderness with his aunt and her dog. And some old trap was out there that, you know, could have been there for 20, 30 years. Who knows? And the dog, which never been anybody, was lovely, nice, whatever, got caught in the trap. It took 3 or 4 people to get that dog out of the trap, and it was going to kill them all. It was friendly 30 seconds ago. But as soon as it was caught in the trap, it was going to eat them alive. Why is it that people become so difficult when they're caught in the trap. Why are they so hard to talk to? They're hurting. They're scared. They don't know the difference between me and the hunter who laid the trap. You come upon somebody caught in a trap, they don't know how to tell the difference. And they're scared for their lives. It does make sense that they'd be hard to handle. So how do you do it? Chet said it took five people to get that dog out. So sometimes it takes more than one person being involved. Jesus talks about that in Matthew 18. But how much easier it is even for five people if it's possible to take the time to build that trust, to sit down with the dog and just wait until it calms down. Now, that isn't always the most merciful thing to do. Do you follow what I'm saying? The longer that dog is caught in that trap, the more they pull, the more they tear, the more damage they do. It might be better for you to get 10 people and hold the dog down and get it out of that trap. It might be better. But there may be other cases where it would do good. It would be good to build trust and let the animal, let the person see that you don't mean them any harm. This is where one pastor I know often he deals with people who are caught in sin by saying, just come and study with me for 6 months. Just take some time. We'll spend the time together. We'll be listening together for God's voice. We'll see what God is saying to you. This isn't about disciplining you. This isn't about, you know, we'll deal with those issues later. Let's just take some time together, journeying together. And he has tremendous results with people who've been caught in sin. Not every time does he succeed. But building that trust can make a big difference. Taking enough time to show kind intention. Where's the gospel in all this? Now it sounds like nothing but bad news. You're being hunted. If your friend gets caught, you've got to get in there and confront them. Or it's going to be worse for you than if you got caught yourself. It seems like nothing but burden, nothing but, oh, this is awful. Where's the good news? Where's the gospel in here? Come on, you can tell me. Nobody can see any good news?
Come and help him out.
Say that again.
Come and help him out.
If a person can be extricated from the trap, when the devil comes along checking his trap lines, he does not get the last laugh. And that is good news. If your brother repents, you can forgive him. That's good news. You don't have to shame him. You don't have to blame him. You don't have to abuse him. You can forgive him just like that. That's right. Traps are... That's right. It's inevitable. And the reality is we go through church just thinking, nobody in my church would ever fall into a trap. Pay attention, folks. Somebody's gonna. You know, we might have a good week this week. But somebody is going to fall into a trap. I have to be honest with you. I had a little bit of a shock. Maybe not too much of a shock. But it ought to be. The you know, you get, how many of you get the Advent Review or the Pacific Union Recorder in your mail?
I do.
Right? The mailing list that controls whether you get those is switching over to the online database. And all our membership information has finally gotten put in the online database. And the Surprise Valley is behind, and so I was getting, making sure that got done and checked that out and looked over the list and realized, wow, I didn't know that person was a member of our church. But that person. We have some work to do. So I went over and looked at the Alturas list. We're sitting ducks. We're absolutely sitting ducks in this church. The enemy has just dragged down one after another after another. And we float along, come to church, as though this is normal. And maybe it is, quote unquote, normal in this world. But woe to you if you act like it's normal. Isn't that what Jesus says? I'm not trying to put words in his mouth or make anything any stronger than what he says. But did Jesus expect his disciples to act like this was normal? Answer me. No, he did not. And he's not trying to be nasty when he says, woe to you. He's not pronouncing a curse on you. He is telling you the logical, appropriate, unavoidable consequence of not being on your guard and thereby becoming an accomplice to the trapper. He's saying, you will be sorrier than if you were dead. Simple thing. Act like it's normal. I have to be honest. I avoid this kind of stuff because confronting people makes me uncomfortable. I don't like dealing with people who want to bite my head off. It's not pleasant. I don't like it. And it's easier to come here and preach a sermon to you all. And we smile and we go home. But we're in a war zone. And political correctness will not save lives. Why do we want to be so polite and not offend anybody? Jesus wasn't politically correct. You understand the term political correctness? He called people vipers. And even the woman caught in adultery, where he was so kind to her. Right? And they wanted to stone her. And he shooed them all off. When he got done, he still told her, go your way and sin no more. It's a trap. It'll kill you. Jesus rebuked her ever so gently, but he still rebuked her. He was willing to call a trap a trap. And sometimes you confront people that are afraid you're going to take away the bait. Well, as long as I got caught, I might as well at least eat the bait. You know, the bait might be poison too. The devil is not giving you something really good. in exchange for your debt. It'd be better if you left a limb there, even though that limb is perfectly good, if you escape with your life. Jesus was not politically correct. And we appreciate Him calling us sinners, right? Do you? I mean, does Jesus offend you when He calls you a sinner? I used to be offended by that. My aunt gave me a poem once when I was a teenager, early teenager. God does not know a sin He does not hate. God does not know a sinner He does not love. God does not know a sin He will not forgive. God does not know a better time than now. And I thought, what does my aunt think I am? Some kind of a big sinner or something? I was offended. The problem was I wasn't converted yet. And I didn't know that I am a big sinner. And I needed to be forgiven right now. I'm not offended by that poem anymore. It's good news when someone is snatched, though they may already be on fire, out of the fires of hell and doused in the river. So I have to ask you this morning, do you know someone who has been caught in a snare? Personally, a brother or sister. Jesus says, if your brother sins. I'm not just saying, do you know people out there in the world who are caught in, they live in the trap, right? And I don't mean that rude in any way, but there are a lot of people in this world, they're not planning to go to heaven. You follow what I'm saying? That they expect death. I'm talking about people who are planning to go to heaven, who are professing to follow God, who desire to be with Him and to know Him, who've been caught in a trap. They may not know how to get out. They may be scared when you come that you're going to club them over the head. But even if it was only for selfish, self-preservation interest, Jesus is willing to motivate you by that. That shakes me up. When Jesus is willing to motivate by self-preservation, even if it is only for self-preservation, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You have any paper? Back of the bulletin? I saw a lot of heads nod when I asked, do you know somebody, a brother or a sister, who's caught in sin? I told you I got a shock when I looked at our membership list. We have close to as many people on our books not attending this church, maybe more than are. And I know of just, you know, I haven't been here that long and I don't know a lot of people that don't attend. But I know of at least five that I can just think of off the top of my head. Maybe six or seven, depending how careful I am counting, that would fit in this category, just in this congregation. People who have been baited by the devil and caught in a trap. And they're generally not with us from week to week. But they say, still, that's certainly their option. And why haven't we clarified with them whether they really want to be part of this church or not? Well, and I'm not trying to settle any specific situations here, but we have a whole process, right? Jesus doesn't get into it here, but if you rebuke your brother and he repents, you forgive. If you rebuke your brother and he doesn't repent, what does Jesus say to do? Come on, you know the story. What does he say? No, he doesn't.
Then he shouldn't leave him alone?
No, he doesn't.
No, he does not say that. He says, go and keep going.
He says, take somebody else. You may not be able to get that dog out of the trap. It's going to bite your head off. Take at least one other person so you don't overwhelm them with a whole crowd of people, but maybe two of you working together. Two or three at most can get that dog out of the trap. Now what? Yes. Yes. So you've spoken to these people and they said, I don't want to be loosed from this trap. Have you taken two or three? Then what are we doing here? Why are we in church today? I was so convicted after preaching this in Surprise Valley, I was ready to come in here this morning and say, I'm going on strike. We'll have no more sermons in this church until we have addressed these issues. This has gone on too long, too far. We are endangering our own salvation. Why do we come to church every week while this is going? If we were an army unit, right? If we were a military unit on patrol, and as many of our members were picked off without us knowing how it happened or what was going on, as has happened in this church, we would be our knees knocking, trying to figure out how to get out of here, because we would want to know who's next. Somebody is picking us off one by one by one, and we don't know how to stop them. How do we stem the tide? We would be so scared. And I'm with you here, all right? But we just go on like it's business as usual. How can God send us new people? Knowing the little ones in our midst are not watched out for. Am I being too harsh?
I know some of the people that they're talking about.
So there is a whole procedure, right? There's a whole process if we find that people are resistant when you just go at one-on-one talk to a person. And we may end up at the place where people say, I would sooner stay with my trap than be released. Right? I've gotten used to it. It's kind of pretty now. People have that right. God gives it that right. We certainly need to give them that right. If people wanted to attend church in Susanville, I have no objection to that. Hopefully, we could work on whatever way we may have offended people, if that's the case. I'm talking about people who are caught in sin. You know, there are people in Cedarville who attend church in Alturas. We don't have any objection to that. So write down the name. Names. Got a piece of paper, a pen? Brothers, sisters, caught in sin. If you need a pen, there's a pencil up here. I've got a pen. Anyone else? There's a few other possibilities for you sitting here. You might be the person caught in a trap. And it is a snare of the devil to keep people away because somebody, well, that doesn't mean that it's as simple as saying, shame on you.
I ask her and ask her and ask her till I get tired. And she knows it as good as anybody.
So you have the name or names written down? You can write them in code if you need to. What comes after that? What would it take for you to avoid being a stumbling block in this person's life? Or being a channel for stumbling, channel for a snare? It'd be hard to avoid personal contact at some point. Right? That's pretty difficult to see how one could avoid that. But do we need to shut down our worship services until... I'll be frank with you. I spend time working on sermons and things, and I don't have time to go visit even the people that I'm aware of and know about. The rest of you may not be sinking as much time into sermon preparation every week as I am, but you're all involved in, you know, keeping the services of the church going and so on. And maybe we need to continue that. But would we be wise to say, well, let's just not worry about having a sermon. Nobody needs to worry about preparing a sermon or for Sabbath school. And when we'll meet here, we'll pray. And as we're convicted, we'll go out, put a sign on the door, the church has left the building. I don't know. It may be somewhat false to say, we'll do that until it's fixed. You follow what I'm saying? Some of this stuff may be a long time and messy, and but it sure seems like it would be better to make sure each situation we're aware of is being actively addressed in process before we continue on. Isn't that in harmony with what Jesus said? If you're on your way to the altar with your sacrifice and you remember that your brother is offended with you, not that you're offended with your brother, not even that your brother sinned, if your brother is offended with you, drop your gift on the ground. Go back and be reconciled with your brother. Then come back and go to church. I've kept you here an awful long time. I got more questions for you, though. It might be useful to ask yourself, why have I not approach this person yet? Or persons? Or maybe I have. Why did I get stuck in the process after talking with them myself? Why didn't I continue on with two or three? And then, of course, the last question is, when will I continue? Wherever I am in the process. Even if it is just to avoid a fate worse than death for yourself, we could say it's your duty to do this. But the reality is, Jesus didn't think of it as, well, it's my duty to go save those sinners on planet Earth. Even if they reject me, even if they are so scared in the trap they're caught in that they chew me up and spit me out, which they did, Jesus didn't say, it's my duty. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, despising its shame, and there is great joy set for you in each situation like this. Maybe not every situation will turn out joyfully, right? But there is joy in the privilege, in the experience of going out like Jesus, like a sheep among wolves. Jesus will take it even if it's just your duty. But there's more than that that He's offering each of us. Being co-workers with Him, having the joy, sharing the joy that He has. As we reach out with Him. That's all. The plan was that next week should be Communion Sabbath on our schedule. I guess we'll expect still to do that. But we've got to do more than just talk about this once in church. Even if it gets to the point of treating that person like a tax collector or sinner. You know what I'm referring to in Matthew 18? The point of that is still that that person may come to their senses and say, I don't want to spend the rest of my life and end up dead in this trap. That's still the point of that. It's still a redemptive action. And we still need to follow all the way through if we care about other people and care about ourselves. I didn't intend this to be a sermon about jewelry. But that's some jewelry that I could do without. And it's some jewelry that I don't want anybody else to wear. Or have to wear. Let us pray. Oh God, we do not mean to be callous. We're being hunted too. Sometimes we feel like we have barely stayed out of the devil's traps ourselves. Maybe we've got a toe or a finger caught. We're hurting. We don't know what to do. But Lord, help us. We need each other. We need to learn how to care for each other. Even if we make a mess of it, even if we don't know how to do it. There's no other way to learn than by doing it. Drive the conviction home to each heart that each person is experiencing today, I pray. Help us make wise plans to reach out and connect with the ones that we know that are caught even now. Lord, as we ask You to pour out Your Spirit on this church, how can we ignore these things and expect any sort of blessing? We want to be like Jesus. To exist here on this earth to seek and save the lost, whether they be lost out there or lost at home. Help us. Give us the heart of Jesus, we pray. Amen.